This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2017, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 4.
I'm Amy Zimmerman, and I have jumped around between three schools, I guess, in my years of teaching. And I found that sometimes when you end up in a new school or you get a different class, sometimes you get maybe a certain subject, or sometimes it's even a little more than that, you end up with some curriculum that just feels like it does not fit maybe your class or your setting. Maybe it's just that year that it doesn't fit. Maybe in general, maybe it just feels like it doesn't fit you. And so I'm going to look a little bit today at what some of your options are. What are you allowed to do with it? I would like to end with just a little bit of looking at what when the right time is to actually go to your school board and say, can we please have something new? But most of what I'm talking about is assuming like this is what you have and you don't have that option, or at least you don't have that option right now. And so what are you allowed to do with that? When you come into a curriculum for the very first year, it is important, I think, to get to know what you have, because at least it's happened for me sometimes where at least the first year I felt like, come on in, we got started a minute or two early. Sometimes you come in the first year and it feels like this is never going to work. And the first year, even the first 2 years, feel like kind of a struggle. But you do learn to adapt it, and it kind of becomes yours to the point where sometimes it looks like a lot more work to change than it does to just continue to use what you have. Starting from the beginning, you want to learn to know your curriculum. Sometimes there are things about it that you don't know. If it's something new coming to you, or if you're moving into a new school or you're a first-year teacher, there might be some things about the curriculum that you simply don't understand. And when you get to know more of that, it may be more workable than what you realized. Our school made a switch in our math curriculum a couple years ago. And the teachers were a bit frustrated with different aspects of it, weren't really pleased. And then we found out that the publisher actually welcomed a phone call from us. We set up a conference call with them, and we were able to bring them some of our questions and have them answer, why is this set up the way it is, or what about this? And we were able to ask them some questions. I don't know how many of them would welcome that, but I would suspect that quite a few of them would. So that's one thing you can do. Asking or looking at it more closely, you might find that some have excessive review. Some curriculum really do have meaningless or busy work that really isn't necessary. Sometimes I forget what's on my notes and what's on your handout, but I have in parentheses on mine intense word searches that take your students hours and maybe don't really help them very much. Some of them actually have extra lessons that are intended to be extra lessons, not ever intended that every class needs to have this. If you're not aware of that, you may feel like it's something that you must do, and it's really not. Another thing I think you should realize is that there are two types of curricula. One type is a mastery-based curriculum where everything that you introduce to the students, you're pretty much assuming that they will learn everything that you introduce to them. And I think this comes out most clearly in math. It's the one where, at least where I've experienced a vast contrast between different curriculum. The other one is spiral-based, and this is given with the understanding that if you continually bring something back to the students, eventually they'll get it. And if you look at the test compared to what you are asked to teach during the chapter, you'll find that the items that maybe you were stressing out over during the chapter because they just weren't getting it is not actually on the test. They're not expected to know this fully yet, and so it's not even on the test. That happened at the school where I'm at right now. We had done a switch. We switched to BJU math, and that's a good example of a spiral-based curriculum. I was teaching first grade at the time. When I really noticed this, I'm in fifth grade now, by the way, but I taught a geometry chapter to the first graders, and the fifth grade teacher, who was teaching a different curriculum, overheard some of the things I was teaching and said, wow, in the curriculum we have in the older grades, because we were going to work this one up through and we hadn't gotten there, she's like, I'm introducing that to my fifth graders and you're teaching the first graders. And it was a lot, but we worked hard. And by the time we got to the test, they knew most of what I had, what was presented in the chapter. I got to the test and realized I hadn't looked ahead like I should have, and realized that a lot of what we had learned was not on the test. They didn't need to remember everything that was introduced. And so that's something to also bring in. I actually think they were capable of it, and it was fine. I don't really regret doing it that way, but they kind of enjoyed the challenge. But I wouldn't have needed to stress out over making sure that they have all these pieces and that they remember every single thing that's introduced. One thing you can do is talk to the teachers in the grades before and after you, especially if they've been there longer than you have. And maybe they can give you some clues on the curriculum. And also, it's good to talk with them. If you're going to make some major changes in content, it's good to have that discussion with them to make sure that you're not missing something that they really do need to be prepared for in the next class. So options. One of the big options you have is in the grading. You are the teacher, and you are allowed to make some of those changes. I think as a new teacher, that was something that took me a little while until I fully understood that. But just because the curriculum has it set up and says, well, these questions are worth this much, and this is exactly how it's set up, does not mean that you cannot change that. Now, sometimes within your school, you still have an understanding. In our school, we're trying to come to a little bit more of an understanding, like in a certain subject, how much of the grade is tests and how much is homework. So, you know, you need to work with your school on that as well, but you should have some flex there with the grades. Your goal should be to give them a fair grade for their effort and for your teaching and for what you've done in class. If you sense that your class is, this is not an issue of, you know, my class just isn't even trying, they're a little older and they have a bad attitude and they're not putting any effort into this. You know, if you're dealing with that, that's probably a different issue, but they're working hard and you feel like they're putting their full effort into it and the grades just overall are coming back and they're not looking good, then you need to change something probably about your grading. Maybe there's a place also to assess your teachings, the way you're going about teaching it. But I would say, first of all, correct some things with the way you're grading. Look at your grading. Is there something that should be changed? And then also assess your teaching technique. Maybe there's some changes you need to make, but don't punish your students maybe for something that you're going to have to work on or fix. And maybe it's not you either. Maybe it's just simply the grading and the way that that is set up. Maybe the lessons are too difficult or the tests don't give enough credit for what they actually know. So here are some different things that you can do to change that grading. You can assign different points to the questions according to difficulty. And there's some different ways that you can do that. Sometimes you come into it and say, well, I'm going to give the really difficult questions that I'm not sure that every student has mastered. I'm not going to make them worth very much because if I've taught mastery and I feel like all of my students should be this high, and then there's a few questions that are just, I think they should have them. We've worked at this, but you realize that a portion of your class is not going to have mastered that, and you maybe don't expect them to, then maybe they're not worth as much. Pull the point level down on those because you're not necessarily quite expecting everyone to make that. On the other hand, if it's something more difficult, but you've all worked at it really hard and you feel like they should have this one, then maybe they're worth more because it really does show something that they should know. One thing that I have done in certain areas is making the questions worth fewer points than what is going to equal 100. So usually you take, you know, maybe you have 25 questions on your quiz or test, and you say, well, okay, 25, make each one worth 4 points, that equals 100, and so I have to do that. It has to equal 100. Well, it doesn't always. In my class, they write 5 Bible memory verses at a time. They can't lose more than 10 points per verse, which means that really they'd get a 50% if they didn't do anything. That doesn't happen, okay? I don't end up with a student who fails all 5 verses. I'm not saying it couldn't ever happen. I would have to decide what to do if that's going to happen. If it was happening on a regular basis, then you're dealing with a totally different problem, specific student issue probably. But that keeps a student who learned 4 of the verses perfectly, but entirely forgets another one, maybe from doing too poorly on the test. It's also a good plan if you're doing something, doing a quiz, where you don't necessarily expect them to have mastered all of this yet. It's a quiz. They're not ready for their test yet. You've introduced something. You've worked at it for a bit, but you haven't gone over it a lot. Then give them a quiz, but only take off, maybe there's five questions. You only take off 5 points if they have it wrong. That gives them credit for what they've worked on, but it doesn't give them a 60% if they get two wrong, which can very quickly make their grade look terrible. And maybe the problem was that the quiz is given before they have it fully mastered. And that's okay. It's a good way to check where they're at. It's a good way to assess what you've worked at so far. But if you assess it and come back and they're all getting 60s and 40s, it simply tells you they need more work. And at that point, you can change the grading. You could also drop the quiz in the trash can and not take it if you feel like that. Well, that's not a fair, not a fair grade for where their whole class is at. If you do this for older students, I think I mentioned in here when I was in high school, I know we had literature quizzes given in this way. And it was one way, I think, for the teacher to assess if we had read the story or not, as we were supposed to. I think we still got a 0% if we got no questions correct, because it pretty much told the teacher that we had not even read the story that we had been assigned for homework. So you can do that. You can go from, 95, 80, 85, 75, 70, 0, if they get to the bottom, they didn't get any. You can curve a grade. And I do this fairly often. There's kind of some different ways that you can do this, but you look at your scope with the class and you see that, wow, the student that did the best only got a 93. Well, then that kind of shows you maybe where you're teaching, where you need to work at your teaching. It might show that there was a bit too much information for the test for the amount of time that you spent on it. And so you can curve it. That's one that I feel like can be used pretty much across your grade levels. And you can kind of decide, you can curve it until they get up to 100%. And right along with that is the next one where you cross off a question on the test. Sometimes I do a mix of these. I sense that there's a question on the test that sometimes we get to the test and I'm like, oh, I gave that test last year. And apparently, we talked about that question a lot last year, but this year, I failed to really spend much time on it. And so, I recognize that the students were not prepared for that question. We hardly discussed it, or maybe didn't discuss it at all. Maybe I totally overlooked it. I would simply cross that question off. Like, if they had gotten the question wrong, it did not subtract any points from their test. It was as if the question wasn't there. I don't usually go back then and rework all my points and try to come out to 100% yet. I just cross it off. Or sometimes I look at that and say, well, for the two students who remembered that we talked about it in class, I still want it to be an advantage to them that they remembered it without being a disadvantage to the others. So I simply curve the grade that many points. So I give them back, maybe the question was worth 3 points. So I give everyone 3 points back, giving the advantage to those who did actually remember, but kind of taking away the disadvantage from those who didn't. You can give additional quizzes or assignments that they can use to improve their grade, which I guess could include a retake on a quiz if you chose to. I would use a retake sometimes when it's information that I really do feel like they need to know. We get to the quiz, a lot of them realize they weren't ready. And I teach fifth grade, so sometimes at this level, they're not real responsible for their own learning yet, but sometimes they should be. So sometimes when I give a quiz, it comes back. I'm like, well, they need to know this information. This is coming back. This is going to come back to hurt them soon. I'll say, okay, we're having a retest in 2 days. We work at it a bit in class. I give them a chance to work at it again. And usually they'll do a lot better the second time through. This might be on something they need to memorize for English. They're going to have to know it anyway. Or sometimes, if you're going strictly by your curriculum, I know Abeka, for instance, in their English is really scattered about their quizzes. You'll go months and months with no quizzes, and then suddenly you have two days in a row, kind of oddly spaced quizzes. Well, sometimes you can put more regular quizzes in there, maybe memorization of some of the parts of speech, things that they are going to need to know that you can work out a bit in class. That'll give them a little push to learn it, and it'll also give them a chance to get a good grade. You can give some additional assignments that are simply extra credit in some way or another. Of course, you have to be a little careful how you hand those out, because it can be the kind of thing where your students who are already doing pretty well are going to gulp that up, and those who are struggling and falling behind don't have time to do time or effort to do an extra assignment, and it can actually space your class out further. So you have to be a little careful how you handle that. You can put your grades in different categories. This is actually a good idea, whether or not you're struggling or not with any of this. Giving grades in separate categories, for example, having homework in one category, having tests in one category, having quizzes in another, and making those categories worth a different amount can really slant how your grades come out. And I think you need to look at it carefully and decide what's fair according to that class. In some classes, you might say, well, I'm going to grade mostly on tests, and the homework and quizzes might be worth a very small amount. That's kind of how I work my math class. My tests are worth a lot that homework assignments are not. But this kind of goes along with the point after that. I give my students the opportunity. The homework isn't worth a lot, but they have the opportunity to do fix-ups before I take a grade on it. And so a lot of them will end up with 100% or nearly 100% in their homework category. It's not worth as much, but they get 100% in it, and that goes a long way. And giving them a chance to have a good grade in that. Because I don't expect perfection the first time around in their homework. That's when they're practicing. That can also alleviate if any of the students have any sort of anxiety about their homework in math. That can alleviate that. And you can do that in other subjects as well. Other classes, it might be more worth it to space that out a bit more, make the tests worth less. Maybe their homework is worth more. And sometimes you have an unusual one. We have kind of a particular unusual spelling curriculum that we just use for my class. And I think our homework is actually worth, the classwork is worth 90% and the tests are worth 10. That's how the curriculum is intended to be set up. And we've done that. We like it. It's kind of different than the usual curriculum. So you have times like that as well. All right, let's go in and look at some things you can do if the curriculum is too hard. Seems too difficult for your class. One thing that you can do is look over and pick out what are the facts that are most important. I think this is a good thing to do, whether or not you think your curriculum is too hard, but really pinpoint the things that you want them to know, and maybe you need to weed out more of the extra information or the things that wouldn't be as important. You can make a study guide. Some curriculum, especially if you get to content subjects, they introduce a lot of content. But what's actually tested on is a much smaller amount. By giving them something that they can study from, that can give them the opportunity to focus in on what they actually maybe need to know. And by the way, some of these things, whether or not you do it for your entire class, it can also be a good thing to do for your struggling student. The grading, unless you have an understanding with your school and the parents about the grading, you're probably not going to change the grading for them. But sometimes I have some students that even in some subjects where I don't have a study guide for the entire class, I give one to my students who struggle to narrow it down for them. It takes a little work to make it up in the first place, but once you have it, you have it, and then it works for the following years. Sometimes you simply need to rewrite the test if the curriculum seems hard. Maybe the test is poorly written. This can be true if you're using a test that comes from the curriculum or a prior teacher or your own test. Sometimes you just need to look at it and assess how the test is written. Maybe their poor grades don't reflect their ability or effort. Maybe it's the test. One thing that I did for various reasons this past year was to skip some of the review tests and put a little more focus onto the new chapter coming up. Actually, it was a little bit more of a time issue than being too difficult. But that is an option. Maybe the review tests are a little over the top and you need to leave out that review test that goes over the whole year, spread it out a little bit. and cut it into smaller chunks for them, especially in the lower grades. But as you get older, that can be true as well. Skipping content. Well, you all know if you get to the end of the year and you didn't get done, then you didn't get done. But what happened? You didn't pick what you're going to skip. You simply skipped the last chapter. And here's another one, another time where it's important to look at your curriculum and know what you have, because some curricula is set up with the intent that you won't finish, or the intent that you might not finish, and others intend that you will finish. So look at it carefully. Sometimes the number of lessons in your curriculum can give you that hint. If they give you 180 or 185 lessons, they probably know you're not going to finish, because most schools don't even have that many days in the classroom. Sometimes it's better to look ahead and say, well, you know, I'm not going to finish. There's just no way we're going to finish this. I always, maybe it's a class you run every year, and you say, well, I always come short like 1 or 2 weeks. We just never get done. And, you know, our school has some other activities. We have field trips and things. There's just no way I can do that. I can't put two lessons in one because it's already that heavy of a load for them. And so sometimes it's better to look ahead and say, well, I think this chapter would be a better one to skip. Or I think there's some additional lessons over here that aren't that necessary. This can allow you to slow down, take some time to cement concepts that really need to be there. Another thing you can do is simply do an alternate section. Now, this, I'm thinking of this maybe more in a content subject. I'm not sure that you're going to want to do this in, well, I'm not sure what this would look like in math or even in English sometimes. Although English could be true if your curriculum has, let's say, creative writing or some other things thrown in with it that you could take out and simply do other activities that are a little different. And I think I have something in, oh, I think that's later if it takes too, the being too difficult and taking too long sort of crisscrosses over each other a bit here. Sometimes it's better to do an alternate section. This past year, I wasn't able to finish my history curriculum because of other things that we had done. So I took a few of the chapters and we did a short project in class on that section. When we got to modern day Africa, rather than studying the 6 countries that they had in entirety with the entire class, I split the class up. I had them do a little poster in pairs on that. We didn't have a test. I think I graded them on the poster. I actually can't quite remember. And then we moved on. And it allowed us to touch on modern day Africa, not entirely skip it, but not take the entire, 2 weeks or something that was usually allotted to it. So that's something. Plus, if the curriculum is really difficult, sometimes your students need a break. And if you can throw something like that in for a couple days, let them know, like, we're skipping a chapter and we're going to do this instead. And they think it's something fun, maybe something they can do with in a group. You might be able to boost their morale a little bit in that as well. Math. We found this in our math curriculum, that there are some concepts that keep coming that are in there that are very difficult. And I personally think that they are beyond the student's developmental level anyway, but we found that they're not on the test. And so we skipped them and it doesn't matter, it's okay. But that's one where you should work closely with the other teachers, find out what they need to know in the following year, look closely at your tests, make sure that you're not going to be skipping something that they now need to learn both steps in the next class. So that one's, I would say, do that with some careful research. And sometimes there's a skill that's put in that is sort of dragging their scores down. Maybe you should be teaching it, but it's just more difficult. So maybe there you need to change grading, change the way you introduce it, maybe introduce it but not grade it. And there again, sometimes you need to talk to the other teachers. I think it's really important to have a lot of communication with the teacher before and after you in a lot of this. Incorporating your own drill is another thing if things seem too difficult. And this is probably more in math, maybe in if you have a lower level phonics, perhaps English and some of the parts of speech and all of that. Or it can also be, you get to older grades and you're learning all the bones or the muscles. Incorporate drill into it, something that they say together and they repeat every time. If you hand off to your middle elementary grade, sometimes even high schoolers can be this way. If you just hand off a sheet to them with a whole list of bones and muscles that they need to learn and have memorized, there's going to be some of them that come back and don't know them very well. Whereas if you begin class every day and you go over them once, it can take a minute or two of your time. and they can be much more prepared. And you might find out that suddenly their test grades really come up, and it was actually just a lack of some memorization. And with something like parts of speech or math concepts, it can really impact their entire understanding and progress. And sometimes for older students, if we're talking math or English and they don't know those, sometimes you need to simply put it in their lap and try to motivate them to work at them themselves. It might be beyond the stage where you're going to do that drill in your class, but they really need to have it. And again, this kind of goes back to what we talked about before, so I'm not going to really review it, but if it seems too difficult, look at your grading scale and those procedures, because maybe that's part of the issue going on as well. Backing up, I just saw I missed this one thing. In a skills-based class, I do this particularly in math and English, there's a certain demonstration of process that I think should be happening. Usually I begin, let's say a new math concept, I demonstrate the process on the board, the overhead usually, at my school, and then we work through it again, and I have the students kind of maybe call out answers as we go. I take hands to help me know what, or I call on students to tell me what to do next. And then I often put the students in pairs, and I actually allow them to do some of their homework assignments this way. I'll say, okay, we did maybe numbers 1 and 2 together. This might depend on how much work is in your book. If you have a lot of work, you can use it in your classroom time, in your class time, to shorten their homework a bit, if you can find that you can do that and they have enough practice. I'll say do numbers 4 to 6 in your, I call them working pairs. They have a partner that they knew who they are. I put them together according to skill, and get with your working partners and do these 3 problems together. And only after that do I assign them to do them independently. And that can really break them into what they're doing. So I really like that process. I do it a lot in math and English. It takes a little more time. I often find we don't get through maybe quite as many of the examples, but I usually feel like they have it better. So I'm not sure that the number of problems is usually what's important anyway. As long as they have it, that's what really matters. All right, switching gears a little bit. This curriculum is very different. This one is too easy or monotonous. Maybe not challenging enough, or maybe it feels kind of challenging, but they actually don't learn as much as what you know they need to learn. Maybe their achievement scores don't look very good. You've compared it to another, you know, what they're doing in another school, and you start realizing, like, wow, we're really kind of behind in this subject. So the easy and monotonous are not quite the same thing, but I did lump them together. So some of these maybe fit more or less to one of them. Adding projects is always something to do. This might be more for the monotonous, but also for the easy. And here's a place where you can direct your more gifted students to a more difficult project, and your student that's struggling to an easier project, that can be a little difficult sometimes. Sometimes the student who's struggling really wants to do the project that looks exciting, and you know that they're not going to handle it real well, but it is a nice way to give the gifted students a challenge, the students that are struggling, something a little easier. Maybe there's projects to do in class. Make food, publish books, do science experiments, do research projects. All of these are things to add to it, give them extra learning opportunities. Sometimes you simply need to add your own lessons or mini lessons in. And this is where it might be good to get, I often like to have books from other curricula in that subject if I feel like it's lacking in some way. Have a few other books on my shelf that I can pull off and say, well, what are other schools, like what else could I be teaching at this grade level? What should they be capable of? When I was teaching second grade in Grenada, our scores were coming back on their achievement tests, and they weren't good, like at all, in some of these subjects. And so I actually had extra time in my day. They could finish the majority of the work by lunchtime. And so I split my afternoon up, and we had a class called afternoon math class, and we had a class called afternoon English class. And I just simply looked at other books and pulled out and made my own lessons. Now, I had a small class, so it was a little easier to do this, but we just worked through problems together. I introduced a lot of concepts that weren't there, and those scores definitely went up. you know, I was able to give those to them. They didn't get any homework in it. I think they looked forward to those classes well more than what they did their books in the morning usually, because we did them together. We did, for math, we did a lot of word problems together and we worked them out. We look at alternative ways to solve them if they hadn't learned some of the other skills behind it. And that was very helpful. And might teach them some enjoyment of it too, if it's something they learn that, oh, this is the math class that I don't have to do any homework. I don't have to do anything on my paper. This is the one where we just do stuff on the board. And I don't know, if they're younger, you know, the one where we always get Cheerios or something. I don't know. But like, that depends on your grade level, of course. Well, actually, older students sometimes like when the candy comes out too. But anyway, add those lessons in that they can add to the skills without maybe adding to their homework or, not that you need to necessarily make up worksheets to go with it. You might need to make up your own worksheets or books to go with tests. This is one thing I had done with one of the science books that I used. It was a lot of fill in the blank. That's what the curriculum gave me. And I didn't like it. I didn't feel like it was a good means of learning. They were pretty good at scanning over the text and finding the answer and writing it in, but they weren't really getting it. And so I just took the time to go through, rewrite those questions, not as a fill in the blank, but as a question that they could actually answer, that they had to read it and look for it. I made up little booklets. We used them for years after that. It was a simple little booklet that I could print out on the copier. It took some work the first year, but after that I was set to go, and I think the teacher after me was able to use them as well. They learned the material better. They also learned the skills of answering questions. And then sometimes there is a certain subject that just feels like a lot of work to the students, like monotonous. It's kind of the same every day. I think I mentioned we have a spelling curriculum called Spelling Through Morphographs, which is a one-year program that we brought in that teaches them how to break words apart and spell all of the words that come from the Latin, the words in our language that come from Latin roots. And I really like it, but you know what? It is kind of monotonous. It's the same every day. Now the students, there's a few things that they really enjoy about it. They have no homework. They generally, even the students that struggle with spelling, do well in the subject. They do a lot of it orally, so they don't have to do a huge amount of work in their book. They do some work in their books, but they do a lot of it orally. So in a general sense, they like it, but you know what? Coming to class every day and it's always the same is a little monotonous. But in order to stick with that program, we really do have to just stick with the program. And so sometimes I just simply need to remind them, this is what you want. You were excited about this at the beginning of the year. You know you don't have any homework after today. And I try to add something fun in the next subject. I can't really touch that one. You know, the day when they're a little tired of answering all the questions orally, we have to stick with that one. That's kind of what we have. And we like the benefits we get from it. And so I think as fifth graders, they should be able to start learning that sometimes there's a subject that I just need to buckle down and work at. I just have to do it. But then this next class is going to have something more fun, or to start recognizing like, yes, it's more work. It's a little boring in some ways, but I have benefits from this and I'm going to put my effort into it because of that. All right. The curriculum takes too long. This may be, like I said before, crosses over a little bit with the curriculum being too hard, but it's not necessarily the same thing always. Skip lessons that aren't covered on the test. I would say if it's just simply too long, be intentional about what you're skipping. Replace a long chapter with a short project. Just don't finish the book. If it's just simply too long, you come to it and it's like, wow, 180 lessons. Well, start teaching. And if you find that you cannot put two lessons in one day and have them adequately learn the material, then don't try. It would be better to have them learn what they need to learn than it would be to get to the end of the year and say, wow, we finished the books. They didn't really get what was in them, but we finished them. That's never really helpful. You're teaching children, not books. So if there's too much material there, the book is too long, then just don't finish. And that depends whether or not you want to just simply stop, go as far as you can and then stop or skip things. That has a lot to do with which type of subject you're working with. I mean, your phonics, you're never going to skip. You're never going to skip lessons in the middle and then get to the end. But when you're doing science or history, you might be more likely to do that. So take that into consideration. sometimes you can cover some of the content in another class, a class where you have more free time, or a class where it overlaps. Sometimes history and Bible overlap. Sometimes if you have a separate creative writing from English, they will often overlap, and sometimes you can be able to skip lessons one place because you know you're going to cover similar material in another class. Now, you have to be a little careful how that shows up on your tests. Maybe that means you need to adjust your test as well, depending how that all comes out. But by using that, you can sometimes cut lessons. And another thing that I think I mentioned is skipping cumulative review tests. If it takes a lot of days to prepare for them and you're stopping mid-year and spending a week or more preparing for the cumulative review and you don't feel like that review is that beneficial, then maybe you should skip that so you can get to the ending chapter at the end of the book. Curriculum too short. I don't know if any of you have this problem. I've only worked with one or two subjects curriculums where this was an issue, but there are some out there where if you just teach what they give you, you will be done long before you need to. So sometimes this might be a scheduling issue, and I don't know if you make up your schedule, your school makes up your schedule, but sometimes it might be a matter of just simply saying, you know what, we gave 40 minutes to this class and it only needed 25. I can use that time better for something else. Maybe you can throw some, what I'm going to call mini lessons. Maybe it's a full lesson, but just a day stuck in here or there on something that connects, but that they would look forward to. This might be projects, experiments, field trips, writing lessons, other things that you can throw in there. Now, if your curriculum is short, but your students still are not doing well, then there's probably some other things you need to consider. Maybe you're not covering the material thoroughly enough. I see this maybe in younger elementary sometimes. If you're a new teacher and you come in, sometimes I've noticed this with the apprentices that I get from the high school that come over. Sometimes they come in and they're given a certain amount of time and they're given a concept that I know would take me the entire 45 minutes to teach, and they get up there and, you know, 20 minutes later they are done. And that probably tells you that you're not breaking the material down far enough. You need to take it into little steps. They probably need more review on it. Talk to a more experienced teacher maybe and get some ideas on that into your exact subject. Maybe you need to incorporate more practice time. Maybe you need to make up your own practice sheets. Maybe there's no written homework at all, and there should be. I'm a little hesitant to add a lot more homework than what... Don't add it if it's not necessary. But if they need more practice, either come up with class activities, worksheets, something that you're able to give them. And I understand that sometimes I work with a single class, so throwing in class review is a much better option for me. If you have two classes, maybe it's not as good of an option. Maybe you need to look at worksheets or something in that. Also adding a daily review session to your class. Open up with 10 minutes of review of what you've been doing before. Maybe that's what's missing. All right, I'm going to quickly go over a few. I'd like to give a little time at the end in case some of you have specific questions, anything that anyone can give some feedback on. But sometimes there's inappropriate content, and this kind of goes in all directions. I picked out a few that I think come up maybe most often. First of all, make sure that the board is aware of the content, especially if it's something new. The suggestions I'm giving from here on out assume that they know that that stuff is in there and that they've chosen to stay with it. If you feel like they're not aware, that's a little different. They should know that, or whoever makes your choice of curriculum, I guess I should say. One of the things that we run into and some of the things that we use is child evangelism, and we don't want to push that on our younger students, and yet sometimes we use those books anyway. So sometimes you need to skip the curriculum's directions on how to teach the lesson and sort of teach it your own way. One thing that we use Abeka's Bible picture cards for grades 1 to 4, but if you read all the stuff off the back of the cards and taught the lesson the way they told you to, you would be pushing the first graders towards salvation the entire time that you're there, trying to reading lots of things about them needing to accept Jesus into their heart right now, and that's not really what we're pushing. So We just simply skip the stuff on the back of the cards. We use the pictures. We teach our own lesson. That's, of course, a little easier because they don't even see the text on the back. That's for us to change. Patriotism. I really feel like if we have, our students will come in contact with some of this, whether or not we have it in school. And so use the opportunity to teach your middle, upper elementary students to be discerning about what they read. We use Abeka history in grade 5 at this point. And now it's old world history, so it's not there quite as much as what it is in the 6th grade class when they do American history, but it's still there and it comes up different places. I notice things like, oh, this is definitely showing their views. And so I use that time to teach my students to notice, what are the author's view on this? We get to the section about Vietnam, and they have a few comments in there, a few sentences in their text that seem a little strange to the students. And I usually bring it up, well, what do you think the people that wrote this book believe about what, you know, what should have been done, or what are they trying to say here? And I forget which section of history we come to it where it really pops out first, but I know that the students, the very first time, and this is kind of the first book that comes up in our school, that really comes out, and the students are often like, well, I thought these are Christian books. Like, why do they have this in here? And they usually, you know, they have to start to wrestle with that a bit, and it's a good opportunity to guide them through that. Now, sometimes your school might choose to skip a book. Sometimes it's you skip a lesson or a chapter, make up your own lessons to go with it when you get to a section where where you feel like it's being pushed to the point where you can hardly teach the lesson. But use that opportunity rather than, if your school has chosen to use those books anyway, then use those opportunities to teach them how to view that information. Hopefully you don't have a lot of this, but occasionally we end up with books where there's simply content that's a little bit too mature, and maybe you just need to cut pages from your books, or add additional explanation. It may depend a little bit on what sort of too mature content you're talking about. Or occasionally you might end up with content that's too childish. Maybe the pictures look really childish, or something about the book. The students are like, why do we have to use these books? They look like they were written for first grade. And sometimes you just need to kind of chuckle with them, add some additional content, facts or other books or videos or something that kind of show them that you recognize they're a little old for the way these books look, but this is what we have. And, you know, maybe you need to just chuckle with them about those pictures and help them move on and, you know, not dwell on the fact that the pictures are a little out of line with their age. I'm going to ask, are any of you teaching curriculum that does not fit, like you're teaching a curriculum that is published in a different country from where you're teaching? Do any of you have that? None of you. The Canadians are probably the more likely ones, or if you're teaching overseas. That's kind of what the next section is. I'm going to go over it really, really quickly. I don't think that's what you're here, but sometimes you need to cross out sections of geography, make up your own money counting worksheets, allow them to use the American or the British spelling, teach them how addresses are written in the country that you're in, or if you're teaching a younger grade, you might want to skip a certain section in science. Like, for example, if the animals are from a region they're not familiar with and you feel like it'd be more important to teach them about the animals from their section. Or you might need to incorporate a few weeks of local history rather than using all the American history that shows up in their books. All right, I'm going to move on to the curriculum that assigns too much homework. You are the teacher. If they can learn what they need to learn without doing the hour of homework at home, don't assign it just because it's there. Figure out how much they need, how much work they need in order to learn what they need to learn, and then that's all that they should need to do. Don't assign all of it if doing half of it is going to prepare them for what they need to know and they're going to be well prepared for the following year, then there's really no reason to do that. So you might assign odds and evens, and that's a good option for math or English. Sometimes you might want to assign the most effective parts, I know in our history book, I don't even usually assign any of the review assignments. We do some review in class, but I don't usually assign them. I don't like the way they're set up. And in Bible class, we do the review assignment. I'll put them in pairs, and they give answers to each other. Sometimes they write them down, sometimes they don't. But I don't assign it for homework. I'm not sure. We don't use our Bible curriculum very thoroughly, so I'm not sure if it's even intended that you would give it for homework, but I don't. Another thing you can do is allow them to do all or parts of certain homework assignments as a class or in groups or pairs. If it's something unusual, they'll probably enjoy it. If it's too unusual, they might not do well with it because they might not be quite sure how to handle this. But I like to do it often enough that it becomes normal and they know how to get with their partner and get something done quickly. But that's another way to allow them to work at it without maybe feeling that burden of so much homework to do on their own. Or maybe the curriculum doesn't have any homework at all. Well, great, maybe it's not needed. So don't make it up if it's not needed. And that's one place to look at the assessments, quizzes and tests and the class assignments that you give them. If they're doing well, then I wouldn't, don't worry about the homework. If they're not doing well, then I would say go back to the section on short curricula and consider, what is causing them not to be doing well. Maybe they need some more practice and maybe there's something else going on. I did throw one other point in here that I've come up against maybe once, and this is a curriculum that requires extreme amounts of writing. This is if you use something that's kind of older, where they expect them to maybe copy the question and the answer, or copy the entire sentence before they mark parts of speech on it. Just simply copying sentences does not cause learning to happen. I'm not saying there's never a time to do it, especially for younger students. They do need to work at writing complete sentences and they do need to do writing. But simply copying is not always that helpful. So if that's what they're being asked to do, a lot of copying, then change the directions where you can. Maybe you can make copies of the textbook and allow the students to write on the copies. Make up worksheets for the lessons. I understand this takes a lot of work. So that the lessons are already typed up. And if you don't have time to do, you say, well, I can't type up every lesson for my whole year. Well, then type up the lesson every Monday for the year. And, the next year you can do the lesson somewhere in between that and, begin a process that will get you there eventually. At least something that the students can look forward to. At least on Monday, we don't have to do the extra work or maybe on Wednesday, if you have church in the evening, is the day that, the homework is cut back or they don't have to do so much copying. And here's just a few suggestions. If you need to make up your lessons, there's various reasons why you need to throw in extra lessons. If it's a content subject where you need to make up your own lessons, sometimes you can use a read aloud, find a book that connects to the subject. Sometimes you can find a ready-made lesson, and we all know how much work it is to make up your own lessons, and a lot of the time you just need to do that, but sometimes for different reasons you just can't. Sometimes you can use another textbook that someone else has put out. There are also black line books around. I think this was maybe more common years ago. One of my favorite is, I think, a bit out of... Actually, it's available as an ebook. You can also... The 100 Plus series, published by Instructional Fair. I think there is a newer version of it. I'm not familiar with the newer version, so I just didn't put it on here, but you might find something if you look these up. Many of them are out of print. They're published as an ebook, but the print versions are still widely available on Amazon, and it tells you in the book, it's legal to make copies for your class. And I didn't even put the names of any because they are available in just about every subject you can imagine and at most grade levels. So I really like to use these. Actually, when I was in Grenada, my curriculum was not complete and I felt like I had to teach extra ones. I use this a lot. They also have some on writing. So if you need extra writing lessons that you don't want to make up yourself, they have writings and they also have English. So where the two overlap, sometimes those books can be a good resource. I particularly like some of the English and writing ones. I think that's what I use the most. But they have them available in math. I also saw some math, science. I'm not sure they have much in history. That would be a little more difficult to pin down, probably. And I think if you'd go to an education store or other websites, you'd probably also find books that are blackline. Although I think in some ways you're finding less of those because of the next one, and that is you can go to a lot of websites where teachers from other schools make up lessons, put them out there, and you can buy the lessons already made. Now, you know, use discernment when you choose which ones, but sometimes it can be a great addition. You know, you're teaching something in English on parts of speech, and you want something to go with it. There's just actually the difficulty in this is picking out which one you actually want and which one's actually going to work the best, because there's usually hundreds of them available, and some of them are free. Usually the better ones are not free, but sometimes there are free ones that are great, or those who produce really good ones will put free ones out to try to get you into their shop. So I have a couple websites listed here that you can look at. Teachers Pay Teachers, Share My Lesson, and education.com are ones where you can find free activities and worksheets, lessons that are made up. For a skills-based subject like math or English, sometimes maybe you just simply need to follow, especially if you're doing a lesson replacement for some reason, follow the basic outline of your lesson, just kind of redo a lesson similar to what they do. Maybe especially for younger classes where you don't want to take the time in class to explain something very different from what they're used to. You just want it to follow the regular format. Of course, if for some reason, this might be true if you're using, more true if you're using a secular curriculum, simply copy the lesson and cut off the offending part and make copies for them instead. And the section on when it's time to actually request something new. Work with what you have, but sometimes there are times where it's the right time to go and ask for something new. The first thing I would say is if you're going to change to something new, you have to have something new to change to. And so do some homework. Unless you have a curriculum committee or board who enjoys looking these things up and figuring out what you should do instead, that's not been my experience. You will probably, if you want something new, you'll probably have to be the one who looks it up and finds something that's new, that's going to be more fitting for where you are. When I taught in Grenada, we did not like what we had. For many years, we didn't feel like it was a good fit, but we didn't feel like we had any good options. And then one time, a teacher showed up and said, "Why aren't you using this instead?" And we stopped and we looked at it and considered it. And everyone said, "That would be great. We didn't know that was an option." And the board was in favor of it, and we made the change, and everyone was very pleased, and it worked out very well. But we couldn't make that change till we had something to change to. So do your homework and look up, talk to other teachers. Make sure it's researched and that you really actually look at it, not that you've just heard about it, but you've actually looked at it. And somewhere in there, you might go to your board about it before you've actually done all the research, ask some questions. Maybe they want to be involved in the process of getting representatives in to present that or whatever. Sometimes your curriculum may have been revised and the new revision comes through and you suddenly realize this is no longer a good option. There's different reasons for that. Or maybe another curriculum has been revised and now that is a good option and it wasn't before. So those are two things to think about. Maybe it's the year to review that subject. At our school, we kind of have a calendar made up or a schedule made up, and every year or two, there's a subject area, I should say, that we examine and say, are we pleased with this? Is it working? What do our achievement scores look like? So the year that comes up is the year that teachers are supposed to make their little sales pitch about what they think should change or what should stay the same. Achievement test scores. If you do achievement tests and you know that your school always does very poorly in a certain area and you feel like you have something that would make a change, that's definitely something to look at. The next one happened to us this past year. The lower grades made a curriculum change and we suddenly realized that it just is not working with the grade above. And actually in this case, the lower grades were now more advanced and we suddenly realized about 2 months into third grade, we sort of dropped the ball on this and had not looked ahead quite as well as what we should have. About 2 months into third grade, we suddenly realized that they weren't going to learn anything new in English that year. Nothing. They had learned it all in second grade. And we were like, well, like, we don't want that to happen. And so we actually did kind of an unusual thing and changed our curriculum mid-year, which is not something I would usually recommend. But we looked at it carefully and felt like it would work. And we went ahead and we're actually going to change that into some of the upper grades. We didn't want to waste a year of their English experience. Also, if you know the previous teachers, maybe you've come in and taken the place of a teacher before you who didn't feel really good about what you have. You know, maybe the administration already is not real pleased with it. That's another time to look to start asking for something new. If you recognize that you're supplementing heavily, maybe you're spending a lot of time on that subject, much more than any other subject because it just is not complete or it's just not working, that's something to consider. Also, if you have a lot of parent complaints about that subject, I think that's another time. That was a little part of our switch in spelling in my class. We got a lot of complaints from parents. The spelling was that we had before was a little too difficult for the grade level. We also made a change in some of our math because of the complaints from parents. So sometimes that can play in. You are working for the parents in a way, and you want to make sure that they are also pleased. I sent this list actually to one of our board members before I brought it here of when you should ask for something new. And he said, well, make sure that they also know that every time you bring something, the board has to look at the cost and the benefit. And sometimes, even if what you're suggesting is a good idea, even if they like it, sometimes they can't. Or sometimes they don't feel like the benefit is going to equal the cost. Of course, sometimes you might bring something that will cost less, and that's always good, although the upfront usually isn't. Do the best with whatever you have. Often, at least at the beginning of the year, you have what you have, and you can't make the change now. So do what you can with what you have, and then, yeah, look carefully about whether you need to change anything. Anyway, our time is almost up. Does anyone have a specific question that they've been holding or bringing here that you really wanted to get some feedback on?
Did spelling through morph really, was that effective?
I feel like it was effective. Now, we've used it for 2 years, and one of the classes was a class that struggled academically. One thing it did do is it allowed us to put some of our poor spellers that had been getting extra help outside back into our general spelling program. I feel like it's going to take a couple more years for us to feel it out. It is not a Christian curriculum, although it really is not here or there. There's nothing in it that would tell you one way or the other, but it is a McGraw-Hill publication, and it's old. It's been around for many, many years. Some of the teachers that were there had had it as students when they were in school and remembered things that they had learned from it. That was part of our pull towards it. We replaced the Abeka fifth grade spelling, which is known to be really difficult. And the spelling through morphographs is known to, is intended to be a one-year program. You replace a year, or it can be used as a remedial for an up. They actually say it can be used anywhere from 4th to 12th grade. We use it in 5th. I feel like to give really good numbers, I'm going to have to wait a couple years. But we've been pleased. It felt like the students who struggled were able to stay in class and succeed as long as they put their effort into it. Now, I had a student or two that struggled with focus in class, and they still didn't do really well because they simply were out the window somewhere instead. But aside from that, I feel like it did allow us to bring our struggling students back in for the most part. Some of them got a little bit of assistance or extra practice with a tutor outside, but then it was able to, they were able to stay in for the majority. So, yeah. Yes, they did. Now, for 1 year, we actually used it with 5th and 6th grade. 6th grade had not had it in 5th, and that class had some students who really struggled, so we were hoping to help them. So our 6th grade teacher is familiar with the program, so she's able to make the most of it when they move into 6th grade and they have words that still use that process. She's able to use that, so that's kind of an extra benefit that, you know, usually isn't going to happen. All right, well, you're free to go. I guess if you have questions that you want to talk among yourselves or ask me later, you're free to do that. Thank you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.